Doku seriál.
Trevor, an owner of a private security agency for farmers, invited me to his company headquarters. I had just visited his clients, Anne-Marie and Peter Bingley, both in their 70s, who became victims of an armed attack at their flower farm 14 years ago. The office is full of computers and weird devices that make even weirder noises. Technology announces and records security breaches at the farms that are monitored by Trevor.
Right, so what we do for the farming community is we constantly keep statistics, and then those statistics we analyze monthly, and then we will pick up the trends. And then with those trends, we'll start working out what our next crime prevention actions will be, and where they will be, and what time they need to happen. So we have a central control room where the farmer will and the rural community will phone in their incident. We record that incident. We load it up into a database. From there, from the database, we then put these pins in a map. So we keep these crime maps in terms of what is happening in each area. So at any time of the day, still a bit of an old system. You know, one can obviously... today's technology, you could use computer programs, but I like this where it's still an old map, because as I walk through my office day in, day out, I can with one glance see where the problems are. So we have, I don't know if you guys have this in your country, but we have the automatic number plate recognition. I've got a tape there. Meryl, can you help me?
Then, suddenly, one of the devices sounds an alarm. Trevor and his wife, Meryl, call a farmer to warn him of potential danger and swing into action. Later, the alarm proves false. The electric fence was disturbed by wild game. I am off to meet a young black girl, Ledimo. She offered to show me around Alexandra, one of the largest black townships created in relation to the apartheid regime. Her mother, a maid in white household, comes from such township. This is one of the places with a high crime rate, mentioned by Gareth Newham, the security expert. Together with Ledimo, we want to talk to local people about their daily life, but only a few people are willing to share their experiences with us. And even those only talk in hints. On one hand, they talk about gunfire at night, attacks in the alleys between shacks, or the rape of women trying to get to the shared toilets. On the other hand, they talk of Alexandra with pride. In the end, they all agree that they wish they could leave. But they have nowhere to go. There is no work, and without it, there is nothing, much less better living conditions. I must admit that overall, looking at the chance meeting with people in South Africa, I am stunned with how many of them had their lives affected by violent crime. Ledimo is no different. She begins to talk of the tragedy that affected her and destroyed her family as well.
My uncle was a victim of a crime, and he was murdered. The place where we come from in our village, he had gone out at night with friends to go partying, and on his way home, some people tried to mug him, and they attacked him, took whatever that he had on him, and beat him to a pulp. So somebody was passing on the street and found him lying there, tried to take him to hospital, and... you know, from there, for the next three weeks, he was just in there fighting for his life, and he didn't make it, unfortunately. it was a very sad time for the family, because even now I'm really not over what happened to him. Like, sometimes I still have questions about why it happened to him, because at his funeral everybody was just describing what a lovely person he was and everything. And to have somebody like that taken away from us, and he was still young, only 35 years old, we were looking forward to so much from him. And yeah, all of us, like my grandparents are still not okay. My grandmother, for one, is not okay. Health-wise, she just got worse. She was healthy, she was okay, but the stress of having to lose a child who was that young, I think just took a toll on her, and she hasn't been okay since.
Which one's stupid? You are a stupid.
Crime affects all of us. In the townships, it is rife, it happens there. In rural areas, in town, everywhere you go, there's a crime. There's a house breaking once in a while. There's a rape that happens. I mean, I've been personally raped in my own home. And I cannot come and want to blame it on a certain race of people. Or it's just crime that happens when somebody wants to feel like they're in charge of your life or want to take whatever that you have in your possession from you. So crime happens everywhere in this country. You cannot run away from it. My rape happened in 2014, and what happened was the person who did this was somebody who used to live in the same building that I lived in. He wasn't really a friend. My cousin used to hang out with him, and one time I had come back from work and I found them drinking by the entrance to the building. And I went to my place, and he noticed that I was alone because my cousin was there. So when he knocked on the door, my initial response was like, it's my cousin, maybe she doesn't have a key. So I went on to try and open the door for my cousin, and it happened to be this guy. So I said to him, my cousin is still down there, that's where I left her, she hasn't come up. So he was like, no, I'm not here to talk to your cousin, I'm here to see you. And I'm like, okay. So I'm standing by the door, trying to block it so that he doesn't even think of getting inside. And he's like, he wants to talk to me. I'm like, about what? So he starts making advances towards me, and I'm like, okay, I'm not interested, you have to go back, and you're drunk anyway, so go back, hang out with your friends, whatever you want to do, like, I'm not interested. So as I'm trying to close the door, he pushed it, and then happened to push me inside, and I fell, and that's when he overpowered me. I called the cops, and six of them came to my apartment, and they were all male. So I was still there crying on a corner, and I'm telling them, this guy just did this. Where is this guy? I tell them he lives at this certain number of flats, or he might be downstairs. That's where you can find him. So it turns out that by the time they were coming in, he saw them. And he said to them, well, in a way, he said, I was a prostitute. We had an agreement. And I'm now trying to flip the switch on him. So I had six cops in my room, literally staring at me and telling me to sleep it off, because what happened was consensual, and I just happened to kind of like back out of my agreement with the guy. It was very traumatic. It was sad. I was angry. Like, wow. I was furious, and I didn't know who to take out my anger on. And I think for a week I stayed in a shelter, because this guy was then threatening my life. His friends were also threatening me. I even had to move out of where I used to stay, because of I felt like my life was in danger. Because every time I would pass in to go to the building, I would have comments about how I'm trying to end an innocent person's life, get him thrown in jail, he's got family, you know, he's the only breadwinner, why am I doing this? You know, just trying to guilt trip me out of getting out of it. But, and I thought that is enough, so I even had to move out of the building.
It's still traumatic for you.
It is. Sometimes when I think about it, especially when I hear stories about these murders in the country or girls going missing and things like that, it just brings back a lot of experiences, because I want to say to people, it can happen to me, it can happen to you, it can happen to the next person, you know.
Do you want to take a handkerchief or something?
Or tissues over there.
Don't say sorry. Sexual
violence is on the rise in this country. Last year, 41,000 rapes were reported. This is one of the reasons that the sentenced perpetrators leave courtrooms with long sentences, as a warning. Despite threats, Ledimo decided not to give up. Using Twitter, she asked for help from a famous black feminist activist, Rosie Motene. Together, they put the man who raped her to trial. He was jailed for 18 years. In the context of an extremely high violent crime rate faced by South Africans, both experts and institutions reject the idea that, in the case of white farmers, there would be a larger degree of racially motivated attacks. In the last year, 47 people died during attacks at farms. Over the same time period, over 21,000 people were murdered, most of them black. Experts suggest that the perpetrators select farmers for their vulnerability. They live in isolated locations, often are wealthy, with valuables hidden in safes. But when Trevor and I drive his white pickup back to the Bingili family, he expresses his doubts.
We see a lot of farm attacks. So there is undoubtedly an underlying political agenda behind this. You do not. And somebody must explain this to me in an understandable way, but you do not go into a house, take pensioners who are 70, 80 years old, torture them, murder them, rape them, and then steal a cell phone. There is no justification in that. So if you take old people like that, you could walk into the house and say, old man, sit in the corner, give me your cell phone, give me your money, and you could walk out, you'd have no resistance. But why do you have to torture someone? Therefore, you are trying to make a statement, you're instilling terrorism, because that's what it is, you are terrorizing a community with the hope that maybe they'll sell and go away, will go away. I have seen in this very area that I network in, called Mulder's Drift. It's about 15 kilometers to the east. You get new people buying into the area for the purposes of development, and all of a sudden you see farm attacks happening. And the result of that is people become scared and they sell their land at a far lesser price than what they would do normally. So it's a kind of a mafia as well that is on the go, that you actually terrorize people and they, in inverted commas, voluntarily leave. But there is definitely an underlying reason behind why these attacks are happening. They, in fact, employ what I call serial farm attackers or serial killers. Now, we've actually got gangs of serial killers that are going into areas and working together as a gang, as a unit, and attacking people and killing them as well. There's no doubt, and I can prove it, and we know that those that have been arrested, gangs have been arrested and are responsible for maybe 7 to 8 different incidences. That's not normal. People actually being convicted and put into jail, I think, is about 3%. So that meaning that there's a lot of criminals out there, and it's lucrative in the sense that, well, I can actually steal and murder and plunder and I don't get caught, so I'm going to come back and do it again. I just need to open it.
Earlier, they told me that nearly 15 years ago, their farm was attacked by 5 robbers. Peter was shot 3 times, their daughter tied up, and Anne-Marie managed to run away from the house. She spent the whole time hiding in tall grass, terrified, until they left. Today, they are still trying to cope with the incident.
I was very nervous to go to the house because I wasn't sure if everybody left. So then I heard voices and I came in quietly, and then I heard my daughter speaking on the phone. So she was talking to Conserve to tell them what happened. And because they tied her up before they left, but she managed to lose herself. Well, I was sure they were dead, and I never prayed so hard as that night. And that's all that I could do. And I was very, very happy to hear her voice and to know that they both survived.
I had my dog on a leash. And the first shot, they tried to shoot the dog, I think. The second shot went into my lower right leg. Then the third shot went through the arm here. And then the last one, it went through my stomach. The tip of my lung was injured, and the shot went two times through the colon and three times through the small intestine. So I was in a bad condition.
But it was not very sure in the beginning that your husband will make it, right?
No, it was a very long time that he was very sick in hospital. But he's a fighter, so he's still here to carry on. And we are very fortunate, and very fortunate for all the people around us that has helped us also afterwards. And I think that's very important, that people are there for each other in times like this.
I can see that it's for both of you big trauma until today, yes. Even though it's already 10 years?
Yeah.
No, it's 15 years now.
15 years? Mm. Why do you think you cannot get over it? Because while you are speaking, you have tears in your eyes. The people don't really see this, but so you can see that it's something really very difficult.
It was a very big shock, and it gives you a blow. In people, you can't believe that people can do this. And we've always been good to our staff, and you can't understand why people do such things.
At Anne-Marie's request, I turn off the recorder. She begins to cry.
It's such a big shock to your system that for months I was too scared to go out on my own in the evening. We never closed doors on the farm. We always had open doors. We always walked around. If I wanted to, shortly after the trauma, when I wanted to go to the stables, I had no weapon or something, and I thought behind every bush there's somebody watching me. And that took a very long time to get out of my system that it is okay. It's not behind every bush, somebody is. But it was very hard, and up to today I still get really nervous, and if I hear of a farm attack somewhere, it really upsets me terribly.
Do you know what was the motive of this?
Farms are soft targets. You can see we are isolated. On a farm, we got to be self-containing. We don't usually need cash, but we have food, we have motor vehicles. Most farmers have got firearms. And so this is easy pickings. And we are especially isolated. In those days, we had no neighbors whatsoever. We were alone here.
But you see, it was like a robbery.
Yeah, it's a robbery.
Because there is big discussion about the motive of these crimes. Of course, every crime is different. But like, do you think it was racially motivated, or it was just really like they were coming for money and this kind of stuff?
No, I don't think it's. I'm not sure if they are racially motivated. There may be cases, but I don't think this one was a case, because the people are all local. So the motive is robbery.
After listening to stories of Trevor's several clients, I wonder how he handles such situations. Even more so, because he shows me photographs from the crime scenes. His mobile phone is full of them. He took these photos himself. On one of them, a young man shot in the head is lying on the floor in a pool of blood. Under his head is a soaked white pillow that Trevor put there. He sat next to the man as he died, while the victim's wife and children watched him with hope in their eyes. How does he handle this?
How do you deal with that?
Well, with great difficulty. I don't... I can't walk away from a crime scene and say it doesn't have an effect on me. If that was the case, then I'm not human. So the unfortunate part is that a lot of the people that I've been to, or people I actually, crime scenes I've been to where people have been seriously injured, beaten, or even murdered, are people I know. And that even makes it worse. So when you do go to a scene where you see a father shot, or mother, children, it does have a serious detrimental impact on one's emotional state. I know one incident I didn't sleep for 4 nights because of it. So I don't deal very well with it, to be absolutely honest with you. And in this line of business, you're never going to get away from it. You're going to have to confront your realities at some stage. So, you know...
We arrive at a luxury restaurant managed by Maddie, a vigorous woman in her 40s with graying hair. She became the victim of a brutal attack with her partner and brother at a farm where they rented a house for 10 years. As soon as she notices me and Trevor, she sends us to a bubbling artificial fountain, saying that she will join us as soon as she has a break.
It's a Friday night. It's a normal get home from work, have dinner. My brother was visiting us from KwaZulu-Natal. We had dinner together. We chatted about our day. And then I decided at about, I went to bed. My partner came in. He had a bath. 15 minutes exactly later, I heard a loud bang. It sounded like a gunshot wound. But it was these four dudes, two of them, used a Bourbillon spanner to break the burglar bars open of the middle bedroom, because my brother, like a bloody idiot, went and left the window open after I told him not to, because I had a dream for 1 year straight up to the day that the attack happened. I could tell you where they were going to come in. I could tell you how many there was going to be. I could tell you what they were going to look like. And in the dream, it was exactly as it happened. I had a warning and I did nothing about it. That night I had a really bad feeling as well. Between the time I got home and the time I went to bed, I told my brother and my partner to go around the house and check the house, because I said to them, something's going to happen. We are being watched. We had a 9mm gun. My partner took the gun and went outside to check. Exactly 22:30, I heard the bang. I checked the clock radio in our room. That lets us wake up. It's the alarm. And then two of them came into our main bedroom, into my room. They smacked the door. They switched on the light. And the first word out of the leader's mouth was, if you cooperate with us, we will not kill you. Now, imagine lying half asleep in bed, and you turn over, and you see this black dude with a gun to your partner's head. What would you do? They tied us up. They threw me off the bed, kicked me. They brought my brother, who was in the bottom lounge watching TV, up. They tied us up with shoelaces. And they started saying to us, we have information that you have money in this house. So we explained to them, we don't have money. We do have a safe, true. But there is no money in that safe. So they phoned the lady who organized this break-in into our house. And she told them, you're in the wrong house. 10 minutes after these guys came into my house, they knew they were in the wrong house. So what do? For 2 hours, they tortured us. They burnt us with an iron. So bad that my brother had to go to hospital with the burns. They hit us with bouillon spanners. They hit us with the butt of the gun. They boiled the kettle and poured boiling water down our bodies. I mean, can you imagine for a woman having hot water being poured down your breast? That is not nice. Then they decided the hot water was boring, so they started with the iron. They switched the iron on and started burning us. They took it in turns. They took turns in beating me, my partner, and my brother. They wanted to cut off my partner and my brother's private parts, because in this country, you can sell the man's private parts and get up to 40 grand for it. So my partner begged them, please don't do this. And then something happened and they didn't do it, but they did start cutting on both him and my brother. They had to go to the doctor the next day and get stitches there. What else do you want to know? So they wanted to rape me, of course. It's the usual national sport in our country, apparently, when you get attacked. So the guy who said to me, I want to rape you, took out his private part and showed it to me. What he doesn't realize is this is not my first attack. This is my third attack in 20 years. Okay? So I walked up to him and I looked him in the eyes like this. Dead. No emotion. Nothing. And when I did that, he didn't know what to do. I wasn't scared. I didn't once say to these guys, please don't kill me. I didn't once say to them, please don't take my TV. Don't take my jewelry. Dude, they even took the ice trays out of my deep freeze. They took toilet paper. Who takes toilet paper? They took food. They took our cell phones. The usual, laptops, TVs, everything.
Which places of your body were harmed?
They burnt me by my vagina. They burnt me in between my legs. They burnt me on my legs. And they burnt my shoulder to shit. I mean, 6 months later, this should be healed up. And they poured hot water between my breasts and down my throat. And they put a knife in my mouth and told me to open my mouth so they could pour the hot water down. I prefer sugar and coffee with my hot water, you know. It would have been nice if you'd at least put a bloody cup of coffee next to me, dude. It's a joke. I'm witsy that way. It's my way of coping with what happened, you know. What else do you want to know?
Why did they burn you with the iron?
Because they hate white people in this country. They don't like white people. They kept on calling me a white dog. They kept on calling me a white bitch. And they kept on saying to me, you think you're clever. I said, no, I'm not clever. You're clever. You want to know what scared me that night? It wasn't the fact that I had a gun against my head and they pulled the trigger and the gun jammed. That didn't scare me. You want to know what scared me that night? Was the hate in their eyes. That is what scared me. That is what broke my heart. Because up until the point where everybody in this country could stop blaming each other for crap that happened 30 years ago and start living together in harmony and not hurt each other,